Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Contract Penalty Clause when we come back. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, King Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 7, that all of the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea is not full, unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Now, you know, every year the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. In fact, it's about 286,000 cubic miles of water. Now, for century after century and millennium after millennium, this has been going on. And the sea hasn't increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Now, we call that the circle or the cycle of evaporation and precipitation. The writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds and then ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. Now, in modern science, we call this meteorology, and we understand it, and we comprehend it. So modern science has learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. Now, that's just one more example of the many examples of science in the Scripture. And it's one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. Now, you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. And then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about the Contract Penalty Clause in Deuteronomy chapter 28. Remember the first 15 verses or so in both Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 spell out benefits. In the business world, we call them the pay package or the bennies that go along with your paycheck. You get these benefits. You know, something like health care or dental insurance, things like that, benefits. Well, there's 33 of these benefits that you get out of the Scripture. You don't have to do anything specific. Just being born, just drawing breath, just being alive. Just being an heir, according to the promise, gives you these benefits. Unfortunately, there's a reciprocity side to the benefits. You know, you're working at General Motors. You're an employee. And you get a paycheck. And you get these benefits. Okay? All right. Now, there's a reciprocity. You got to work. You got to show up every day at 8 o'clock. You got to punch the time clock. You got to wear steel-toed shoes and a hard hat and safety goggles you know, you've got some reciprocity that you've got to perform on in order to collect those benefits. It shouldn't seem to be too difficult to comprehend or grasp. You do it every day when you go to work. You get benefits, and then there's reciprocity. Well, the old covenant contract that God negotiated with the children of Israel, the people of Israel, through Moses. Moses was the go-between there, the representative. And it was a deal. It was a contract. It was a covenant in the terms of the old King James. And a covenant is simply a contract. It's an agreement. And it wasn't a meeting of the minds. It was an adhesion contract, and all of the terms and conditions on both sides of the contract were dictated by the strong unilateral power that we call God. However, it was a take it or leave it contract. The people didn't have to accept it. They could have said, hey, kiss off. And we're going back to Egypt. Get out of our lives. Get out of our face. And that would have been a choice for them to make. But they made a different choice. They said, hey, this sounds like a good program. We like this program. We like these benefits. That's why people work at GM or Ford or Microsoft or you know, IBM or wherever you're working. You like those benefits, and you want to work there. That's why you're a government employee or a highway patrolman or whatever it is you're doing in life. Now, you have to put in your day's work. You have to, you know, you have to toe the line, and it's kind of a given, you know. You show up to work every day, and you do your work, and you go home at night, and you expect payment. All right, now, if the boss has been paying you regularly, and you have not been working, you have not been producing, you have not been putting in your 8 hours, you have not been performing, you put in the 8 hours, but you didn't perform while you were on the job, don't you think that your boss would come over and say, hey, Bob, Sally, Alice, Jane, I want to talk to you about your work performance. I want to talk to you about our agreement here. You're not putting out what you agreed to, what I demand, what I expect, what I am paying for. Now, typically, the boss would not just come up, thrash you, nor trash you, and throw you out. He'd come up and talk to you a little bit first. And so here we see in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, these two chapters that deal with the penal clause, the boss is coming up to us and he's talking to us. And he's saying, hey, I'm not getting out of this deal what you agreed to give me. I gave you your health insurance. I gave you your dental insurance. I gave you your paycheck every week. But I'm not getting the labor. I'm not getting the work. I'm not getting the performance. I'm not getting the income that I'm expecting from you as an employee. Therefore, I'm going to put you on notice. And then I want you to reform. I want you to change. I want you to perform on that contract. That doesn't seem to be too far out now, does it? Sounds kind of reasonable to me. All right, so maybe you would give him the finger and say, kiss off, you know. Well, then maybe he might just can you. Well, if you get canned from the job, you've been destroyed from your job. You've been terminated. You know, you've lost. Now, you may want to replace that with something else. You know, that's another story for another day. But the moral to the story is that your boss is going to destroy you from the job site. He's going to can you. He's going to throw you out. He's going to take away all of your benefits. Now, he might start off by leaning on you. You know, he might lean on you and say, well, I'm going to take away your health insurance, or I'm going to take away this or that. And that's what we see here in Deuteronomy 28. It's where we left off last time. It was in verse, about 34 or so. It was about 32. Where it says, your sons and your daughters shall be given unto another people, and your eyes shall look and fail with longing for them all the day long, and there shall be no might in your hand. And I told you that social lady taking 2.5 million children a year. But it can get worse than that. You could have a national invading army come in here and take all of your children away to their country. And as we read on here, that's precisely what he's proposing. He says in verse 33, "The fruit of your land and all of your labor shall a nation which you know not eat up, and you shall be only oppressed and crushed always." Verse 34, "So that you shall be mad for the sight of your eyes which you shall see." Well, I can understand that. You know, if somebody came in here and took my farm, took my house, burned it to the ground, I think that would upset me. I think I would be just real upset to see my labor destroyed, my work, my life work. But that's what's coming. Now he says, "The Eternal shall smite you in the knees and in the legs with a sore botch that can't be healed from the sole of your foot to the top of your head. And the Eternal shall bring you and your king, which you shall set over you, unto a nation which neither you nor your fathers have known, and there shall you serve other gods of wood and stone." Well, you know, we like to serve other gods. In fact, here in America, we have invited in everybody from every country in the world. Not entirely clear why we thought we needed to be the melting pot of the world, but for some reason we decided we wanted to do that. And now we have about 20 million of these Indians from Mexico. 20 million, we call them illegal aliens here in this country, but they're about 10% of the population of Mexico now resides in the United States. And from what I understand, we kind of brought it on ourselves with the World Trade Organization, the WTO and GATT and NAFTA and so on. But then, leaving that aside, the moral of the story is that these strangers are coming into our land, and they're rising up very high above us and bringing us down very low. And you'll see a prophecy in here that's aimed right at them. Right at them. But here in verse 35, the Lord will smite you in the knees and in the legs with a sore botch. And then he says, the king that we set up, George Bush, shall another nation which neither you nor your fathers have known. I suspect that's going to be the Chinese. I don't know that positively, but my gut reaction is the Chinese. Because of this 200 million man army that's spoken of, you know, 200 million man army is going to fight in Megiddo. And now our king, George Bush, says he's going to attack Iran. He says those Iranians over there are an axis of evil. And the Iranians are tied in, you know, by treaty to the Russians and the Chinese. The Russians and the Chinese are communists, and they want to destroy, they want to set up this world ruling government. Actually, it's the United States that's trying to set up this world ruling government, and we want to rule over the Chinese and the Russians and everybody else with our own little empire. And I think the Chinese and the Japanese and the Indians have different ideas. Honest to God, I think that they're thinking to themselves, you know, The Americans are nice guys, but we just don't think we want to buy into their program. And Jesus, in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, spoke of this, and it's called the Great Tribulation. He said, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not from the beginning of the world to that time." He said that it would top Noah's flood for death and destruction. Top Noah's flood. Boy, that's a hard act to follow. When you kill everybody in the world but eight people, that's a tough act. He says it's going to be worse than that. And there's 30 of these prophecies in the Bible that deal with this thing called the Great Tribulation, the end of the age, the second coming of Christ, and so on. 30 of those prophecies, of which this chapter is one of. So I thought I'd hit these two high spots. But it's not the only high spot. But did you get that? The king that we set over us. You know, that only comes in a democracy. The English people, you know, they don't set the king over them. That Queen Elizabeth, you know, they didn't elect her. They didn't pick her out of a crowd. She was born into that family. And she's got a boy named Charlie. And he's got a boy, you know, named, I don't know, Harry or Henry or something. Or William, and he was going to take over the throne. See, it's done by descent. It's done by family. And that's exactly what kingdoms are all about. They know who the next king is going to be. Here in America, we don't know who our next president's going to be. But we're going to set him over us. We're going to elect him. You know, we're Democrats over here, so we're going to elect our king. Here's the brightest spot of the whole prophecy. That sorry fellow is going to go into captivity with us. Yeah. You thought, and I know when I read in newsletters, they talk about the elitists, of which George Bush is one of them. Well, it may not be George Bush that goes into captivity with us, but whoever this king is that we set over us, Hillary Clinton, you know, or somebody else, they're going to go with us. That's the bright spot. I didn't want to go alone. In fact, I didn't want to go at all. He goes on and he says that the Lord will bring you and your king, which you shall set over you, into a nation which neither you nor your fathers have known, and there shall you serve other gods, wood and stone. You want to serve other gods? You want to practice ecumenical religion? We're going to have our opportunity in spades. Total political subjugation. National captivity. Gets worse than that. Deportation. Now, the New World Order gang, they've got a vision for the North American continent. They want to turn it back into a national or a native game preserve. They want the buffalo back in North Dakota. And God is going to help them do just that. He is going to deport everybody from off of North America. And by the way, that includes all of you people from south of the Rio Grande River. Going to deport all of you. So when you come up here, you want to remember, I mentioned this to you a time or two in this series, that you're called in biblical terms strangers in the land. Strangers are dealt with under the same law. So when you come here, the punishment that we Americans, we Anglo-Saxons, are about to be visited with is going to be visited on you. So when you think about coming to America, think about the penal clause at the same time. Put that in the back of your mind. Verse 37, you shall become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all the nations where the Eternal shall lead you. Well, you can picture that. Can you just take a look at the United States of America? Take a look at the Roman Empire. You know, the Roman Empire is a proverb, it's a byword to this day. The greatest empire that ever existed in the history of the world. Destroyed. Destroyed. And there's been several resurrections of that Roman Empire, of which the eighth resurrection's on the way. The United States of Europe. But I'm just pointing out to you that here's a prophecy that's right on point. Right on point. Future tense, but right on point. He says, you shall carry much seed out into the field, and you shall gather but little in, for the locust shall consume it. You shall plant vineyards and dress them, but you shall neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worm shall eat them. You shall have olive trees throughout all of your coasts, but you shall not anoint yourself with the oil, for your olive shall cast its fruit. You shall beget sons and daughters, but you shall not enjoy them, for they shall go into captivity. All the trees and fruit of your land shall the locust consume. Think of that. Crop failure. Now, we haven't had that yet. It's in the offing. For instance, I reported this to you not too long ago. Here in the Midwest, we have a big aquifer here called the Ogla Aquifer. There's about 15 years worth of water left in it. In some areas, it's already gone dry, like North Texas up in the Panhandle. And that aquifer produces one half of all the foodstuffs in this country. One half of all the foodstuffs produced in America come out of the water that is used for irrigation in that aquifer. Now remember, God said He'd give us rain in due season if we'd practice the law. We didn't practice the law, so He withheld the rain. So we said, well, and we'll show you. So we went into the irrigation business big time. And so we've been irrigating for the last 75 years. Okay, but the aquifer is about dry. And the rains have not returned. And what do you think that's going to spell for us? How do you read that, boys and girls? Now, you got 15 years left, and that's maximum. And you're drilling more wells into the aquifer every year. And you're drawing it out faster than ever before. And it's not dry yet, and there's still water down there. But you're consuming it 16 times faster than the aquifer can replenish itself. And half your food comes out of that aquifer. All right. Can you spell disaster, boys and girls? Can you say famine, boys and girls? All right. So when you see this prophecy, and then you put the science behind it, it isn't a real stretch of your imagination now, is it? You don't really need an IQ of 160 now to put that scenario together and come to a conclusion now, do you? Now there's in verse 43, the stranger that's within you shall get up above you very high and shall bring you down very low. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Have you ever thought about all the Jewish bankers in the country lending to us? You know, all the credit cards that they've put out here? Have you thought about that? He shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him. Debt. You shall be in debt to him, but he will not be in debt to you. I know I get letters here every once in a while, you know, roundly criticizing the Jews. I just want to point out to you that no Jewish banker has ever put a gun to my head and made me sign a mortgage. So you can sit there and blame it on them if you want to, but this isn't a problem that comes from the Jews or Jewish bankers or communists or Democrats or Republicans. This is a problem that comes from you and me, boys and girls. This is our problem. We got a breach of contract. And it's our God that's doing this to us. Part of it is cause and effect. But the bad weather isn't cause and effect. That's being caused by God. He's doing that to us. That aquifer up there, yeah, we're drawing the water down from the aquifer, but the ultimate cause of it was we wouldn't practice the land Sabbaths, we wouldn't practice the Jubilees, we wanted to practice communism, and so he withheld the rain. We said, well, without the rain. Remember back in the 1930s when we had the Dust Bowl period? Hey, when we didn't get the rain, we said, well, kiss off, God. We'll just drill holes in the ground and we'll irrigate. It's more expensive and more time-consuming. And it's really a waste of time, effort, and energy, and especially water resources. But then that's what we said we were going to do, and we did it. Now we got all these center pivots running around out here in Kansas and Nebraska, remember? Irrigating all that corn out there that we're going to make all this biodiesel out of, remember, so that we can solve the energy crisis. Boys and girls, there isn't any energy crisis. That's a fiction. We have 3.6 trillion barrels of oil in the United States of America by count. I mean, they went out and estimated, they counted the amount. There's probably more than that, but that's how much we know of. It's locked up in oil shale. Now, the Canadians are pretty smart people. They've started to mine their tar sand. I mean, they're making money off of that. Well, good for you Canadians. I suspect that in the final analysis, the Chinese are going to come over there and take your tar sand away from you. But at least you guys are up there developing your own resources in your own land. We Americans, we're not smart enough to do that, so we're buying our oil from the Arabians. And we're running up these massive deficits over here. There's no way in hell that we can ever pay them off. And you Canadians would be best served to get paid because Americans are deadbeats and we're not going to pay you. We're going to take your oil, burn it up in our Winnebagoes, and then we ain't going to pay you for it. If I was you, I'd demand cash on delivery. Now, moreover, verse 45, he says, moreover, all of these curses shall come upon you and shall pursue you and overtake you until you be destroyed, because you hearken not unto the voice of the Eternal your God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. All right, now let's think about that. Why is all of this happening to us? Remember, Mayor Nagin down there in New Orleans, he said, hey, maybe this is a curse from God. Mayor Nagin, if he'd have looked at Deuteronomy 28, verse 45, he would have seen with specificity. That's exactly it. Who said so? The guy that wrote the book. He said, the reason that I'm doing this to you is because breach of contract. You guys won't practice the commandments, statutes, and judgments. Furthermore, you had a Supreme Court Chief Justice down here in Alabama who actually wanted to obey God and keep his commandments and put the Ten Commandments on public display, which, by the way, there's two statutes that require that. Two statutes that require that we post the Ten Commandments on our doorposts and on our gates. When was the last time you saw the Ten Commandments posted on somebody's doorpost? You walk up to somebody's door and you're knocking on the door and there is a sign and it's got the Ten Commandments. You ever seen a thing like that? Well, there's one outfit in this country that's making those signs for sale. It has them. That's where I buy mine. I buy them from this company that makes the Ten Commandments. The guy's going to starve to death in the final analysis, waiting for orders to come in, but I just thought I'd share with you the fact that there is one company that I know of that makes those signs. So I bought them from him. I put them on my doorpost. I'll put them on my gate. That's so that here in verse 45, moreover, all these curses shall come upon you. I don't want these curses. And pursue you. I don't want to be pursued by these curses. And overtake you until you be destroyed. I don't want to be overtaken and I don't want to be destroyed. And then the reason for this, because you hearkened not unto the voice of the Eternal your God. So I said, well, I'm going to hearken unto his voice and I'm going to put those signs up because that's what he told me to do. It's what the contract calls for. It's what the contract requires. If I want to get my paycheck and I want to get the benefits and I want to avoid the curses and the destruction, then I got to put the signs up. Now, out of 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, that's one. So there's 758 more. Okay? But I'm in compliance with that one. Now, when you break this down, boys and girls, just to show you that it isn't quite as impossible as your preacher keeps telling you, the preachers are the guys that are the big problem. They say, you can't practice this law. Excuse me, you can practice 2,000 statutes in your traffic code, but you can't practice 759 statutes in the Bible? Huh? What the hell are we talking about here? Excuse me, children, what is it that's so damn hard about putting a sign up on your gate? People put up no trespassing signs all over their properties. They don't seem to have any problems with no trespassing. But we have a problem putting up the Ten Commandments? Huh? You can't do that. Impossible. Beyond your capacity. You've been to college, you got a degree, you got letters after your name, but you can't put up that sign on your gate or on your doorpost? Ah, come on, give me a break. The answer is, I don't want to put it up. It would make me look stupid. Or religious or something else. That's neither here nor there. The law requires it. You didn't do it. You're in breach of contract. And verse 45, this is Deuteronomy 28:45. Now listen up. He said, now because you hearkened not unto the voice of the Eternal your God to keep his commandments and his statutes, which he commanded you, here's what I'm going to do to you. So when all of these things happen to you, a Hurricane Katrina down there in New Orleans, you take a look around New Orleans and see how many houses that were destroyed in New Orleans had the Ten Commandments posted on the doors. How many of those properties had the Ten Commandments posted on the gates? I think the answer is zero. That is about as close to a perfect score as you can get. Just about as close to perfect as you can get. I know somebody's going to write me a letter now and say, well, you know, water seeks its own level. So you mean to tell me that if your gate had the Ten Commandments on it, and my gate didn't, Hurricane Katrina's floodwaters wouldn't have flooded your house? Somebody's going to write me that letter. Here's my answer to you, son. Those of us that obey God and keep His commandments are smart enough not to live below sea level. And I would have sold that damn house, and I would have got the hell out of there as rapidly as possible, and leave it to you and the rest of the fools down there that want to live below sea level. No, I know that's not very charitable of me, but you know, common sense, you know, has got to come into play here at some point in time. And I don't want to get in the way of the happiness and success of you people down there in the Gulf Coast, but have you thought about rebuilding down there? You've got more hurricanes coming. You got more tornadoes coming. You got more storm surges coming. You got God on your ass, and you want to rebuild down there on the Gulf Coast? I tell you, little children, my common sense tells me a little better than that. Hey, I got to give you a mid-course reminder here before we go any further, so I can keep the FCC happy and our radio stations and everybody cooking. And I want to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to our website, George Gordon. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adult and compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I'm going to mark number 45 down here. This is verse 45. And I'm going to skip ahead to another prophecy that's right along this line in Ezekiel chapter 18. Ezekiel chapter 18. If you got a Bible and you want to follow along, flip over there to it. Now remember, he said, the reason I'm going to do this to you, always bear in mind, the reason I'm going to do this to you is because you would not give me reciprocity on our deal. Now, I mentioned this to you the other day. You weren't at Independence Hall in Philadelphia when our Constitution was negotiated in 1787, but it's binding upon you. It's binding upon all of the heirs and assigns forever, or as long as the United States exists. And this law, that this contract, this deal that was negotiated by your great-granddaddy back here 84 generations ago, is binding upon you today. And furthermore, it is binding upon all of you strangers that live in any of these Israelite countries. If you're living in France, it's binding upon you. It's binding upon you Frenchmen because you're from the tribe of Reuben. It's binding upon all the Moroccans that are residing in France. And when there's hell to pay, the Moroccans are going to pay it right along with you Frenchmen. And the same thing is true with the English, the Irish, the Scots, the Danes, the Germans, the Swiss, the Belgians, the Luxembourgers, and the United States, Great Britain, and don't forget you Icelanders over there. You Icelanders are about to have your economy turn turtle on you. And then Australia, New Zealand, and then the Scandinavian countries. You know, you three guys up there at the top, the Finns, the Swedes, and the Norwegians. Now, any of the strangers, any of you people around the world living in any of those countries over there, watch out, because the shoe's about to fall, and when it falls, it's going to fall right on you, right along with us. So if you think you've been oppressed, all you blacks here in America, you think you've been oppressed by those whiteys and those honkies, all right, well, you ain't seen oppression yet. You haven't seen oppression. You wait until this guy comes down on us. And he's just about to come down on us. So if you want to escape this, you might want to move out to a different country. Or, you might want to put that Ten Commandments sign up on your gate and your doorpost, and you might want to come into compliance with a few more of these laws. You may not practice 100% of them, but you'll do a lot better to practice 80, 90, 95%. Now, he tells you to practice all 100%. Don't get me wrong now. I'm not suggesting that you don't practice all of the law or that you pick and choose. Don't do that. Because Ezekiel 18 zeroes in on the guy that does the law and the guy that doesn't. Listen to this. In Ezekiel chapter 18, he says, "The word of the Eternal came unto me again, saying, What mean you that you use this proverb concerning the land of Israel, saying, The fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. Well, as I live, says the Eternal, you shall not have occasion any more to use this proverb in Israel." He says, "Behold, all souls are mine, as the soul of the father, so also the soul of the son is mine, the soul that sinneth it shall die." All right, now boys and girls, that's a mouthful. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Did any preacher ever tell you that souls could die, or did they tell you that souls are immortal and that your body dies, but your immortal soul goes to heaven or goes to hell? Well, you don't have to be real smart to figure that out. It says, "The soul that sinneth, it shall die." Boys and girls, souls die. And souls are not immortal, and you don't have an immortal soul. You are a soul, and you're going to die. And in some cases, you're going to die before your time. Now, you were guaranteed 70 years of life, 25,550 days. That's how long your life is. That's how long you're entitled to live under the terms of our contract. Now, I'm 67, and I'm not going to die for 36 more months. You got that? 36 more months. As long as I practice this law, I'm not going to die for 36 months. When I reach 70 years old, I'm on borrowed time. I might live to be 80, 90, or 100, like Bob Hope lived to be 100. George Burns lived to be 100. They were on borrowed time for 30 years. I'd like to be on borrowed time for 30 years. No guarantees there, but, you know. Moral to the story is, if I practice the law, I'm entitled to my 70 years. If you die before you're 70 years old, then there's a breach of contract, and either you violated the terms and conditions, or God did. And if God violates the terms and conditions, boys and girls, that's a wrongful death action. You've got a suit against God Almighty Himself. Be sure you bring that up in the judgment when he starts asking you some hard questions. Hey, you, come over here. I want to talk to you. Make sure you got something intelligent to say to the boss when you meet him. All right, verse 5, he goes on to say, "But if a man be just and do that which is lawful and right, and has not eaten upon the mountains, and neither has lifted his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, and neither has defiled his neighbor's wife, and neither has come near to a menstruous woman," sexual relations with menstruous women, "and has not oppressed any, but has restored to the debtor his pledge, has spoiled none by violence, has given his bread to the hungry, and has covered the naked with a garment. He that has not given forth upon usury, has not paid interest on his monthly mortgage, neither has taken any increase, that has withdrawn his hand from iniquity, has executed true judgment between man and man, has walked in my statutes, and has kept my judgments to deal truly, he is just. He shall surely live, says the Eternal." Now, boys and girls, that's a neat benefit. You practice this law, you're going to live. And you're going to live until you're 70. Now, suppose that, you know, you're around 30, 40 years old. And you're sitting there saying to yourself, I'm 30 or 40 years old. Let's see, at 40, I've got 30 years left. I've got 30 or 40 years left. Now, an invading army comes in here, raises hell with the Americans, destroys our nation, takes us into captivity, and yet God says, I'm going to live. And why is that? Well, because you get your Ten Commandments sign out on your gate or on your doorpost. And he says, you haven't lifted your eyes to the idols of Israel or come near to a menstruous woman. Now, you know, boys and girls, let's suppose that you got a wife and every once in a while she has a period. There's a time for sex, and there's a time for no sex. Now, under the terms of our contract over here, it says menstrual cycle, no sex time. Can you do that? Well, maybe in the past you didn't know, but now you do. I just told you. All right, so now, if you knew that, and if you followed that law, you know, notice the point that he made here, he said, and has not come near to. How about your monthly mortgage payment? Has not given forth upon usury? That's paying interest. Not just collecting it, that's paying it. Given forth. Has not given forth upon usury. Now, are you paying a mortgage? I mean, are you paying a car payment over here? Are you paying interest? Have you got credit cards out here and you're paying 15, 20, 25, 30% interest on those credit cards that you got maxed out? Well, boys and girls, don't be surprised now. Don't be real shocked if you're destroyed from off the land and these curses come upon you. I mean, it's a choice that you got to make. Now, your preacher says you can't practice these laws. But your God says not only can you practice them, if you don't practice them, there's going to be hell to pay. Now, you can practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and boys and girls, I submit to you, anybody that can practice communism can practice the 10 Commandments. Anybody with a driver's license and can practice 2,000 traffic laws can practice 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. Let's run over this again. Let's see what it is about this that you cannot do. Let's try it. Verse 5, if a man be just and do that which is lawful and right. Now, you can buckle your seatbelt, drive 55, and get a driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance. Can't you? And you've all got that. All right. Now, if you can do that, let's see, can you do this? Have not eaten upon the mountains, neither has lifted his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, and neither has defiled his neighbor's wife, and neither has come near to a menstruous woman. Let's see if we can write this down. You think you could leave your wife alone for 5 days during the month? Try that. Do you think that you could keep your hands off your neighbor's wife? That's adultery. Could you do that? Do you think that maybe you could stop lifting up your eyes to the idols of the house of Israel? Do you think maybe you could cancel your voter's registration and stop voting for Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer? And has not eaten upon the mountains. Well, a mountain is a nation. Do you think maybe you could get off welfare, food stamps, and off of the government dole and support yourself for a change? I know, that's a toughie. But your God tells you that He'll give you all of your necessities. In fact, He'll do better than necessities. He'll give you the luxuries. He says He'll bless you in everything that you put your hand to do. He says He'll give you cattle and land and gold and silver, a hell of a lot more than is offered by welfare, food stamps, and the WIC program, or Social Security and Medicare combined. You think maybe you could give that up for something better? All right, let's try verse 7. And has not oppressed any. Hasn't oppressed any. Well, let's see. Maybe if you're charging interest to a widow, orphans, children, you know, maybe you're a government official, and maybe you're out here handing out tickets. You know, you're a highway patrolman. How many people are you oppressing? Maybe you're working for the FBI or Homeland Security, and you're enforcing the Patriot Act. Do you think maybe, social lady, you could stop oppressing and stealing people's children? You think maybe you could stop the oppression, you oppressors? I know, it's a wild new concept for many of you, but think about it. Because if you can't stop oppressing the people that you have control and power over, you can rest assured that your God can teach you all about oppression, because it's coming to a city near you. Let's try another one. But has restored to the debtor his pledge. Oh, have you paid your bills? Has spoiled none by violence? You think maybe you could give up the street gangs, punks? And has given his bread to the hungry. Think maybe you could give a little bit of alms to the hungry? Maybe you could give a little bit to the United Way or the Salvation Army or some charity. Or to some poor old widow. Or something. And has covered the naked with a garment. You know, the next time somebody's house burns down, maybe you could give a little to the Red Cross or something like that, who's going to come out and help that family out. Or maybe you could do it personally. I mean, you know, if a fire occurs and these people are out on the street, did you think maybe you could do something, a little bit, to help them in their need? Now, he that has not given forth upon usury, neither has taken any increase. Given forth, you think maybe you could stop paying interest on your credit cards? You think maybe you could close those dudes out, pay your mortgage off, or get the hell out of a house that you can't afford? And if you're paying interest now, boys and girls, of the criminal activity for which God says, hey, listen, shall this guy live? And the answer is no, he shall not. Neither has taken any increase, that has withdrawn his hand from iniquity, has executed true judgment between man and man. Iniquity is crime, lawlessness, sin, has walked in my statutes, and has kept my judgments, to deal truly. He is just. He shall surely live, says the Eternal. I think that's a pretty straightforward deal there. You obey God, keep His commandments. Now, there's 133, you might want to write this down, 133 laws. These 133 laws are governed by 759 statutes, punishable by 28 penalties. You got that now? All right, let's try it again. 133 laws, you know, like thou shalt not commit adultery, which are governed by a number of statutes, 759 statutes, such as there shall not be a sodomite of the sons of Israel. Sodomy is a sex crime. And then in Exodus chapter, is it Exodus? I think it's Exodus 18. There's a bunch of sex crimes in there. Just, you know, to give you an illustration. Adultery isn't just dinging your neighbor's wife. There's about 15 different configurations of sex crimes. You know, like having sex with a mother and her daughter, like Woody Allen was having sex with his wife and with his stepdaughter or with her daughter. That's a crime. That's not only a crime, that's a crime punishable by death. It's a crime punishable by death by burning at the stake. That's one of those 28 penalties. It's one of those incestuous personal crimes sodomy. It's just, it just defies description. It's wickedness and evil. Now, most people aren't into that kind of thing. You know, most people aren't practicing sodomy and bestiality and incest and one thing or another. And you know, you probably don't have as much to overcome or as much to get under control as maybe some other guy. But, when your preacher says to you, you can't practice this whole law over here, that's a lie. You can practice this whole law. You can practice the whole traffic code of Pennsylvania. By God, you can practice the whole law of God. And anybody that tells you you can't is lying to you. Now, there isn't anything in that list there in those five verses that I can't do. And that I don't do. So just tuck it away in your heart. If I can do it, you can do it. You're probably smarter than I am. Verse 10. If this guy begets a son that is a robber, a shedder of blood, and that does the like to any of these things, and that doeth not any of those duties, but even hath eaten upon the mountains, taken welfare and food stamps, and is living on Social Security and Medicare, and defiled his neighbor's wife. He's out here having sex with somebody else's wife. Has oppressed the poor and the needy. Has spoiled by violence. Has not restored the pledge. And has lifted up his eyes to the idols. And has committed abomination. Has given forth upon usury. Has taken increase. Shall he then live? He shall not live. He has done all of these abominations, and he shall surely die, and his blood shall be upon him. He shall be the proximate cause of his own injury. And if fate doesn't get you, God says, I'm going to. If your own actions don't kill you, you can rest assured that I'll get the job done. Now, this same prophet, this same guy, Ezekiel, here, back about verse, back about chapter 4, 5, 6, along there, a little story in here about the hares. I didn't look it up, so I don't know exactly where it's at, but just start reading chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, along in there, and you'll read about these hares. And God called him, he said, I want you to shave your head. Then I want you to take the hair, and I want you to divide it into three parcels. And then he goes on to explain what these three parcels are all about. And then the first parcel, he says, is going to die in a war. Second parcel, the second third, is going to die by famine and disease. You know, after the war is over and the Chinese come over here and take everything you've got and make you mad for the sight of your eyes and left you without any food, and then you're going to starve to death. There will be some survivors from all of that, and those survivors are going to be rounded up and then deported. That's Ezekiel. There's three of these prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. They're called the major prophets. And this guy, Ezekiel, his mission, his job is to take this message to the house of Israel. Not to you Jews now, but to the house of Israel. God had a special bitch with you Jews over there. That he's been working on with you guys for a long time. And World War II and those concentration camps was your turn. Now it's our turn. The Israelites are going to get it now. We're about to get our comeuppance. And especially we here in the United States of America. And the abominations that we have been foisting off on all the rest of the people of the world is about to come back to roost. So I thought I'd share that with you, give you an opportunity to shape up. As old dad said, you know, it's time for you to shape up or ship out. Straighten up and fly right. And here's Ezekiel chapter 18 telling you just exactly that. Now in verse 14 he says, "Now lo, if he begets a son that sees all of his father's sins which he has done, and considers and doeth not such like, that has not eaten upon the mountains, neither has lifted up his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, and has not defiled his neighbor's wife, and neither has oppressed any, has not withholden the pledge, neither has spoiled by violence, but has given his bread to the hungry, and has covered the naked with a garment, that has taken off his hand from the poor, that has not received usury nor increase, has executed my judgments, has walked in my statutes, he shall not die for the iniquity of his father, he shall surely live. And as for his father, because he cruelly oppressed, spoiled his brother by violence, and did that which is not good among his people, lo, even he shall die in his iniquity. And yet you say," verse 19, "why? Does not the son bear the iniquity of the father, when the son has done that which is lawful and right, and has kept all of my statutes, and has done none of them? He shall surely live." Now, boys and girls, have you heard this story about inherited sin? That, you know, that everybody has sinned, and if you haven't sinned, and if you practiced the law perfectly, you've got this inherited sin. That's a damn lie. You know that? And any preacher that tells you that you've got inherited sin is a liar. And the truth is not in him. Now, flip over here again, Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 19. Tells you plainly, no inherited sin here. Verse 19, yet you say, why? Does not the son bear the iniquity of the father? You ask that question. Well, don't we have inherited sin from our fathers? God answers, when the son has done that which is lawful and right, and has kept all of my statutes, and has done them, he shall surely live. Now, your daddy can be a dirty rounder. My dad was. My dad was a good old boy. But my dad chased wild women, and he did all of these abominations, and he died at age 53. You know, he smoked and he drank and chased wild women, and he took welfare, and I mean, if there was any crime that he could commit in violation of the law of God, he was right at the head of the line. And he taught me how to do the same thing. The difference is that I considered my wicked and evil daddy and my wicked and evil granddaddy, who I love, you know, just like you love your mom and dad. Nice people. I like them. But, you know, you just can't do away with the fact that he broke a lot of laws. And in the process of breaking those laws, he died in his sin, and I considered that and changed. I expect to live to be 70 plus. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I'm going to have to leave it right there. We'll take it up right there in Ezekiel next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, talking about the contract penalties, or the clause of the penalty clause in our contract. Let me remind you again that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We'll leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.